And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this Beaver Breakdown edition of a Gopher destroying in Pac-12 After Dark, a 48-14 final score out in Corvallis at about 1 in the morning on early Sunday morning. So we have a lot to get into. And Luke and I were talking in the pre-production meeting. We feel old tonight. Luke and I are... So I just turned 25. I think Luke's late 20s, early 30s. So I found out a couple of my friends are now getting... are expecting children, and it's like, Luke, we're getting old.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, life happens, man. So let's get into this, this 48-14 victory for the Gophers. So my first question, Ryan, are the Gophers good, or is Oregon State just that bad?
Oregon State, I was texting with, a few different collegiate coaches during the game who had it on, and all of them told me the same thing, that Gary Anderson is probably going to be the first coach fired this year, because Oregon State is atrocious. But in that same respect, if you're a halfway decent football team to a good football team, which I think Minnesota is, this is what you're supposed to do to these kind of football teams on the road, even if it is a Power 5 opponent. I mean, Minnesota puts up 48 points. They run for over 250 yards, 5 rushing touchdowns. I mean, you're supposed to win by 30 against a terrible opponent. And frankly, that's what Oregon State is, at least on the defensive side of the ball. So Oregon State's awful. We knew that they were coming into this game. They had shown that they were awful. And I don't really see a way that, unless they improve dramatically, that Gary Anderson's going to have a job by about mid-November, because this team has regressed and regressed in Minnesota. On the other side of things, and more importantly on that side of things, took a step forward, I think, in a lot of different areas. So we have a lot to get into in this massacre that happened out early Sunday morning.
All right, so let's start offensively. This is a game where the Gophers ran just north of 60 plays and actually only threw the ball 8 times on the evening. It wasn't like they ran the ball incredibly effectively. I mean, they had fits and spurts, but it wasn't just a consistent drubbing down their throat. But let's get into that first half and just talk about the what has become the first quarter Rota to Johnson connection.
Yeah, that's crazy. And again, for those of you who want to follow along for this breakdown, I encourage you right now to head on over to Gopher Illustrated and check out my GIF rewind from today, which was a whole hassle and a half because Fox Sports Go and Fox Sports One don't exactly have on demand. So I believe I have 50 GIFs between all four quarters that we can dive into and just explore. So if you want to head on over there and click through those. So as I'm explaining things to you here on the podcast, whether you're sitting in traffic or at home on your desktop, you get the play live as I describe it to you. So as you said, it just seems to be Rota to Johnson is going to be a thing. It's going to be early and often. It's going to be all the times in between. I mean, Minnesota only threw the ball 8 times because they didn't really have to throw it any more than that. But of the 8 targets, 4 of those were Tyler Johnson. And I think that there were even more that were negated by penalty that don't actually count in the stat book. I think Tyler drew at least 2 pass interference, maybe 3 off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think it was 2. I think you're right, 2.
But I think Jerry Kill would be proud, because between Rota and Johnson, they are definitely stroking the post. It is something that is happening early and often. And when you look at both of these 60-yard touchdown passes, both routes, I believe, if I know my football at all, were both Tyler Johnson running a post right up the middle. They weren't the exact same play, and Tyler Johnson said as much after the game. Tyler against Buffalo was on the outside. Demetrius Douglas was on the inside, but roles were reversed there. Tyler Johnson was on the inside. And so when you look at that gigantic pass play Minnesota was able to complete, that's a culmination of Oregon State selling out to stop the run. I believe they had all 3 linebackers in the box. So they had 7 there plus a safety down. So it was cover 0 across the board, which means it's man-to-man for each one of the guys on the outside. And Tyler was able to take advantage of that. And it's just crazy to me, Luke. And again, we've talked about this religiously on the podcast here. Tyler Johnson isn't fast. That's not what he's known for.
Right.
Yet he has 2 60-yard touchdowns under his belt, which – again, and I was talking with this with a former Golden Gopher football coach from last year's staff at Minnesota's at a high school football game last Friday. when Minnesota went after Tyler Johnson, I believe at camp, he ran something like 4.9 or 5. And to see how far he's come in terms of in the agility and the speed side of things since he entered college, I mean, it's quite a credit to first Tyler Johnson's work ethic, plus the strength and conditioning staff continuing to work with him and Matt Simon and all the development you've been able to see there. So Connor wrote it. Again, in this run-pass option offense, you draw them in because you think they were running read option, so the linebackers and the safety come down to stop that. Tyler Johnson runs the post. He creates separation, catches the ball. And the nice thing here was Rota didn't put it high, so Tyler didn't have to jump. He was able to just accelerate into it, and he was able to pull away. But again, four catches for 121 yards total, plus another couple of penalties. And I believe there was a third that was that wasn't a penalty, but it was negated by an awful chop block call where
That should have been a touchdown.
Yeah, it should have been his second touchdown of the game. Rodney Smith actually hits the guy in the chest, and then he eventually goes down. I mean, again, if you're diving at someone, you're going to start high and go low. He hits him in the chest, and as he's falling, Garrison Wright topples him over. Well, the referee missed what he saw because he had a terrible angle, and it's negated. So instead of a touchdown, Emmett Carpenter has to sneak through a 49-yard field goal in the pouring rain, which he was able to do, which is, again, we'll get to him. I was impressed with what I saw from him on field goals. But now that Connor Rota has been named the starter, Tyler Johnson is going to probably religiously be very close to 100 yards a game and lead this team in receiving.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. Just to add on to the play between Rota and Johnson, Rota has to get some credit for, you know, throwing a really good ball. I'd say the first week it wasn't the greatest ball. Johnson made a nice grab and did the rest with his feet. But this one was in stride on the money, and that's partly why Johnson was able to outrun, given the separation he had. But let's talk a little bit about Rota. You know, only 8 passes, 7 completions, 158 yards, 1 touchdown, no interceptions. We were texting about this during the game, but you know, I've been impressed. He's been fairly efficient on the year. You know, he does have the one really bad interception. He was 12 for 20 in the first game, but he's seen a lot of cover zero and a lot of man to man. And, you know, and I'm not trying to knock him for this, but you know, for the most part, it is much easier to throw against man coverage. And, you know, we talked at length last year about how Leidner saw the most success for him was against man-to-man. Curious your thoughts on that.
Well, it's because, you know, obviously when teams play cover zero, cover one, that means cover zero, there's zero safeties over the top. Cover one, there's only one safety in the middle of the field. And that's because teams are selling out to stop the run. You look at the two running backs that carried the ball 47 times in the day. So if you want to stop the run, in which for the most part, Oregon State really wasn't able to do, especially in the second half where Minnesota ran 35 plays in the second half and folks, 33 of them were running, including 21 to end the game. So if you don't have to pass and you're only going to run, well, then the opposing team should put 6, 7, 8 guys in the box at times. So, Connor Rota has been able to take advantage of that. I did think he made some pretty good throws. We talked about the touchdown throw, and there was also a really key throw. If you want to go to the GIF rewind in the third quarter, folks, it was a third down. Or it might have been actually, it might be the second quarter now that I think of it off the top of my head. Minnesota just had 14 points put up on them quickly because of, and we'll get to this, a very fluky touchdown drive the first time, which was first an awful spot by one of the side judges that extended the drive. And then a double reverse punt conversion that the guy throwing the ball releases it midair as he's being tossed back. And then the tight end, and I talked about this in the GIF rewind, I don't think he catches the ball if it's not in the pouring rain because he tries to stop, but he ends up sliding on his tush. And it's just, it's super fluky. And
he's actually laying like sprawled out as he catches
it. He's on his back when he catches it.
Yeah.
Like if this is a dry field, he can't stop and it falls incomplete. And, you know, we're not talking about it. And then Demaryius Croft pulls a very big no-no in a Kirk Shiraka offense. And again, we'll get that here in a bit, but the momentum had shifted back to Oregon State. It was 17-14 Minnesota. I believe Minnesota had it 3rd and 6, and Connor Rota makes a very, very good throw to Tyler Johnson on the outside where he rolls right. Tyler Johnson doesn't have any separation at the time, but he leads him short, so Tyler's able to beat Tyler. When Connor releases his ball, has his head turned around, He's able to stop his route short, create separation, get the first down, and Minnesota's able to keep the chains moving. Again, 7 of 8 for 151 or 158 yards and a touchdown. But Luke, more importantly, Connor Rhoda ran the ball.
Well,
it's like he listens to the podcast.
He did theoretically run the ball. I think I don't remember off the top of my head.
What do you mean theoretically? Yes, he only kept it once on read option.
Yes.
He changed his best.
Okay.
And instead of keeping no times, he kept it once, and he was able to scramble 5 times again. I'm not asking him to become this ultimate, you know, read option quarterback overnight, but, you know, at least he kept it 5 times, and he wasn't afraid to use his legs. Now, the one time he did keep it, it wasn't exactly pretty. I thought he should have kept it inside of Conley, and also I appreciate his effort in terms of trying to juke out the safety coming downhill there. That was pretty fun to watch. But, again, you see the difference between Connor Rhoda and read option and Demery Croft. The fourth quarter, it's late in the fourth quarter. So, again, how much of it is the Beaver defense is tired and they don't really care at this point, and how much of it is they forgot who is a quarterback? Because when Demery Croft was able to take it 64 to the house, he was untouched. Because both the end and the safety came downhill thinking that, oh, Connor Rhoda is the quarterback, so I don't really have to respect the quarterback actually taking it. And then Demery Croft gets to the outside, and he's never seen so much green in his life, and he sprints 64 yards for a score. So, again, I'm just asking Connor to continue to take steps forward, and I think he did that in consistency in the passing game. And, again, would I want him to keep it more than once if the read that he's making is correct? Yes. Do I think he missed some reads? Yes. But I'm just happy that he found success with his legs against Oregon State, and so he won't go back away from that in theory once teams get harder. Because, again, you look at Middle Tennessee State, Maryland, and I believe the next one is Purdue. So, again, Maryland looks to be a pretty good team. We'll see what Middle Tennessee State looks like later this week in terms of injury-wise, but I'm just happy that he found some success there.
Yeah, he has to make strides in the run game because unless their design gives, he's absolutely making some just wrong, flat out wrong reads. Like there's just no ifs, ands, ors, or buts about it. Like he's making he's making bad reads that are ultimately giving his running back no chance for success.
Yes, to an extent, but again, it's a change from last week. Where
I get
again,
that.
Connor Rhoda refused to keep the ball on read option. He was just not comfortable with his legs, and he changed that a little bit against Oregon State. He scrambled 5 times. He's got to learn to slide a little bit more athletically, especially in that first one. He got kiboshed by about 3 different people. But yeah, I'm not asking Connor Rhoda to become Demery Croft and read option overnight. But he's got to keep improving. As I mentioned, again, change your best is something that's very, very prevalent without this Coach Fleck coaching staff. So, again, he made some incorrect reads again this week, but at least he was able to find some success with his legs, and hopefully against Middle Tennessee State, he continues to get better in read option.
All right, let's continue to talk about that running attack. Offensive line-wise, what were you able to see? Did you see the offensive line changing their best?
I thought they were better than they were against Buffalo. And again, I'm not asking them to become a dominant offensive line like a Stanford or even to a lesser extent Wisconsin. But I do think that they found some more success. And even the interesting part of it was like when Jared Weiler went down, which is again, very unfortunate. And I'm hearing that he's probably not going to be able to play this weekend. The first play, Connor Olson slides in at center, both Vincent Calhoun and Garrison Ryder at guard. And Minnesota runs off a 17-yard play where the entire offensive line just opens a gigantic hole. And, again, that's nice to see because we didn't even have those against Buffalo. There were none of those. The 2 long runs of the day were both had to be manufactured by the running back. So Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks still, their only longs on the season are 17 yards between the two of them. So Minnesota's still waiting for that game-breaking play from the running backs. And I still think the thing that we're not talking about in terms of offensive line-wise that we need to more is this team hasn't given up a sack yet. And
yeah.
When you go back and you watch the passing plays, Connor Rhoda and or Demery Croft have forever to throw. Like Nick Conley, Donnell Green, and and the interior of the offensive line are doing a fantastic job in terms of keeping a clean pocket. And when they do feel some pressure, the quarterback is adept enough to step up or roll out away from it. Again, through two games against Buffalo and Oregon State, not the most ferocious of defenses, but it is worth noting there is no sacks. Now, in terms of the run blocking game, there is still a lot left to be improved. But again, they improved from the previous week. You know, Nick Conley and Connor Olsen only are in their second career starts, their second career games. And you could see that both were playing with more confidence. I still think Donnell Green is Minnesota's best offensive lineman at left tackle. I think he does a lot of things in both the running and passing game. And then Garrison Wright, Jared Weiler, and Vincent Calhoun are also still trying to come back into their own after missing a lot of time in the offseason. So, again, I'm not anticipating Jared Weiler being able to go next week. So that means another week of Connor Olsen at center, both Weiler and Calhoun at guards. But the other thing we probably should talk about there is Minnesota can't afford anybody else to go down.
Right.
Because especially on the interior, because it gets very short very quickly. Like, this is the only injury that can really sustain there. And you don't see the dramatic drop-off of play, in my opinion. It was also interesting to note that when Nick Conley had his helmet pop off, it was Sam Schluter that went in at right tackle, not Blaze Andrews, which had not been the case from what the media had seen in fall camp. So it does look like the staff is trying to preserve as many redshirts as they can if they can help it. So offensive line depth being tested this early in the season isn't exactly music to my ears, but overall, again, this is an offensive line that had 5 rushing touchdowns, 250-plus rushing yards. They only saw their quarterbacks throw the ball 8 times. So, were they getting the amount of push I would like to see them get initially off the line and creating holes and separation for the running backs? No, but again, I think that they can continue to improve on that, especially next week against Middle Tennessee State. But were they better than the week before? Yes. So we'll see how that continues against Middle Tennessee.
All right, to close on offense, let's talk a little bit about just the offensive philosophy approach, the schematics at which they attacked the Oregon State defense. You know, we talked after the Buffalo game that, they really didn't show their cards at all. They kept it really vanilla. I'm curious, was this everything? Have they showed their cards at this point? We saw some jet sweep.
No.
Okay.
No, they had. I mean, you look at the game plan for Minnesota coming into this game. I can probably imagine that it wasn't running the ball 58 times and only passing 8 times. Now, is that what the actual reality of it was? Yes, because Minnesota had success. They were up big. You know, game script dictated that let's keep the ball on the ground. They were having success on the ground. So, again, if they don't have to show anything of what a Kirk Ciarrocca offense looks at, why give Middle Tennessee State or Maryland anything to really grasp? So I think that you saw some of it in the first half, but even then, Minnesota was having success on the ground. Why go away from read option, inside zone, and power if you don't have to? So, 35 plays in the second half, 33 were runs. And we haven't really seen what a Kirk Ciarrocca offense looks like, but you're seeing, again, we don't even know, or fans don't even know what it looks like, and Minnesota still puts up 48 points.
Yeah.
And before we really go away from the offense here, we probably should also talk about the decision today that Coach Fleck announced that Connor Rota is going to be the starter. I can't really say a whole lot to this here on the podcast. If you want to know a little bit more and your GI member hat over there. But I heard some few different interesting things on that tonight. And I'm very interested, and maybe by the time you're listening to this, Fleck has explained his decision. But the interesting part that I found was that after the game, he was point blank asked, "Is Connor Rota your starter?" And he said, I didn't say that. And now 48 hours later, he goes on Facebook Live and he says that Connor Rota is a starter. Well, I can't really get into too many details, but there has been a significant change in the last 48 hours that has dictated that. So I'll be very interested to see how he addresses it in the next 48 hours, but there is going to be some changes here coming quickly. But even still, we haven't even talked about Riley Smith or Shannon Brooks. Shannon Brooks named the Rose Bowl Player of the Week, 17 carries for 91 yards, 5 yards a carry, while Rodney was the workhorse for 30 freaking carries. And he also had a score of 3 yards a carry. So I think both backs, especially in the fourth quarter, significantly impressed me. If you go to the GIF rewind and then you watch the fourth quarter, I mean, you're going to see two running backs who are giving it their all. I mean, Rodney Smith is throwing a block from that against the Mike linebackers. Or Connor Rota can get a first down when Minnesota's up, you know, 20 points in the fourth quarter. And then, again, he gets denied the line of scrimmage, but he keeps grinding, and he turns a negative one-yard loss on third down, turns that into a five-yard gain and a fresh set of downs. Like, both backs are so fun to watch, as they are grinders. They are ones that never keep their feet. You know, they never stop their feet. They're always grinding for extra yards. And they know that that's what they have to do with the amount of people that are going to be playing in the box, because Minnesota's had so much success. So, overall, and again, you can't really bash 48 points from the offense, 250 yards rushing, five rushing touchdowns, and a quarterback who goes 7 of 8 for 150 yards and a touchdown. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things working for Minnesota, but again, this is a very vanilla offense against Oregon State, because they didn't have to do anything. They ran the ball 58 times, folks. They only passed the ball 8 times, because if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and that's not what Kirk Ciarrocco was going to do against Oregon State.
All right, let's turn the tables and talk a little defense. You know, the things that just stick out, the 14 points, you know, we already touched on, you know, the first touchdown was kind of a fluke. The second one's on a turnover that, you know, what I think was maybe in the red zone or close to the red zone. So their backs against the wall. And even then, you know, they held pretty strong. You know, other highlights, you know, what they gave up 3 rushing yards in the second half. They only gave up 225 total yards. Oregon State, not great, you know, giving up the 3 turnovers. But, you know, a couple of those really were just straight up forced. It wasn't like an errant throw or anything like that. They're all fumbles, all great plays, especially the Duke McGee play, I thought was spectacular, really. You know, defensively, again, Jonathan Celestine just seems to be the heart and soul of this defense right now.
Yeah, you mentioned that turnover that Minnesota had that set up points, and I forgot to mention that. So, again, final note on the offense. What folks don't know about that fumble was at every PJ Fleck practice I've been to, and it's probably somewhere north of 15 at this point, at the end of every practice, every single player on the roster goes through a fumble recovery drill. You know, from the specialists to the quarterbacks to the defensive linemen. And what they're taught to do, and again, each is, you know, position specific, but the quarterbacks are taught, if you can't get the first grasp, so say the snap is rolled back to you, if you can't get it initially, just fall on the ball, get in the fetal position, and cover it up with 2 hands. The issue is Croft didn't handle it. You know, it was a very good snap, actually. It hits him right in the chest. But then he tries to go for the second attempt. Instead of falling on the ball, he tries to pick it up again, and it slips out of his hands, goes backwards. And again, that's not going to win you any points with PJ Fleck, because we've talked about this, and I've stressed this plenty on Gopher Gridiron Radio. The ball is the program, and that is stressed constantly and consistently within the offense. So that really didn't help Demry Croft, and I think that Connor Rota, again, kind of went away with the job in the second half. But as you said, this defense has had knack for making a lot of second half adjustments. We talked about the 14 points, their first set of points, you know, a couple of crazy catches from Jordan Villeman, a double reverse punt score. Again, it just a couple of fluky things that I don't think are very sustainable. And then you, on the second side, Demry Croft turns it over in the Oregon State red zone. And that was another part of it. You have to know down and distant. You can't not fall on the ball when you're deep in your own territory. So they get 14 quick points, but then the defense really responds, especially in the second half. I mean, 28-0 in terms of Minnesota, and you look at this defense, they only allowed 35 total yards.
Right.
And then, and to put that in perspective, Oregon State only ran 18 plays because Minnesota was 5 of 5 in terms of getting them off the field in 3 and outs. So 18 total plays, 35 total yards. That's less than 2 yards of play in the second half. Oregon State was 0-5 on third down, and Minnesota absolutely dominated time of possession. And the other thing to look at there is Minnesota's running defense really came to play. For the second straight week, Minnesota's defense has only allowed 3 yards in the second half on the ground. Same thing happened against Buffalo. Buffalo ran the ball 6 times for 3 yards. And against Oregon State ran the ball 8 times for 3 yards. So whatever Rob Smith is cooking up in terms of second half adjustments, I mean, he is proving through two games to be a heck of a guy that knows how to make the correct adjustments. And the nice thing about the defense too, Luke, I mean, you mentioned it, a bunch of different guys were able to do things.
Yeah.
Duke McGee on a crossing route on the tight end there. He's able to strip the ball out. Keandre Thomas, he's able to fall on it. You see Gary Moore look exactly like the way he's looked in practice. He does a perfect push-pull on the defensive tackle, throws him to the side. He's able to fluster Jake Luton, who's not able to put away the ball. He strips it, and I believe Thomas Barber or Kamal Martin falls on it. And then Thomas Barber puts his helmet perfectly in the right place and absolutely body slams Ryan Nall, who's 6'2", 230 pounds, and Thomas Barber is only 5'11". To watch his leg drive on that, and I think I have a pretty good gif of it on the GIF Rewind, I mean, he picks him up and just tosses him. I mean, Mike Sherrills and Don Barber have to be smiling somewhere, and I believe Jonathan Celestine falls on that ball. So you've heard us mention six different names, plus Jonathan Celestine absolutely decapitates the running back into the quarterback. He's Minnesota's leading tackler. He also has he has 10 total tackles on the day, a tackle for loss. Kamal Martin and Carter Coughlin bend the corners for their first sacks. It was an overall team effort. And if you haven't even noticed, I haven't talked about Antoine Winfield, Steven Richardson, different guys like that. So when an entire team, an entire defense can come together and be collective like they were, I mean, you're going to find a lot of success like that.
Yeah, you had a lot of guys contribute. It was a team effort. And, you know, one thing that we haven't really even touched on yet, and this impacts, you know, and equalizes games, is the rain, right? That's something that came in towards the latter part of the I think it was the first quarter, maybe the second quarter, but that's something where, you know, things can get away from you. And this defense, you know, stood strong the entire half, or the entire end of the second quarter, and then into and through the second half. It, you know, just quite the effort. Guys to highlight, I thought, you know, Chenault got picked on again, but he actually turned around and had quite a game. You know, 8 tackles, 4 solo. He had a couple pass breakups. I thought he had a pretty good showing given how much they tried to pick on him.
And that's the theme through two games, is opposing defenses are choosing to pick on the more veteran of the two corners between Keandre Thomas and Antonio Chenault. And it's worth noting, for the second straight week, they just decided that we want to pick on Chenault. So to start the game, didn't have the greatest of starting plays. He was shading. He wasn't supposed to let anything outside of him, because if I remember the play correctly, Minnesota only had one safety deep, and that was Jacob Huff. And he catches, I believe, a 10-yard comeback. And instead of forcing him, you know, to the sidelines, he takes the inside track, where that's not the way you're supposed to play that. So it turns a 10-yard catch into a 30-yard gain for Oregon State. But again, Minnesota, just if there's going to be a place that's going to be tested consistently for throughout the rest of the season, it's going to be the secondary. Keandre Thomas and Antonio Chenault are still breaking themselves in. Mm-hmm. Jacob Huff is still coming into his own. Again, his second career start. And thankfully he was there with the tackle. He had a couple of key tackles in open space there that really saved big plays. So again, that was the big question mark coming into the season from prior assistant coaches and prior people that had coached him, was, we know that he can be a playmaker, but can he tackle? Well, I think through two games, he's proving that he's becoming more and more consistent with his tackling. Because even in the final moments of the game, if you didn't catch this, folks, Minnesota brought in their two defense. Well, except in the secondary, because Chenault and Keandre were still out there because they don't have any other depth. And the only other safety behind the other two is a walk-on from Wisconsin by the name of Calvin Swenson. The rest of the twos are true freshmen that haven't had their red shirts burned yet. So if there's going to be a place where Minnesota can't afford any injuries, it's the secondary, because it gets very, very youthful very quick. And these are a bunch of guys that, again, Minnesota's trying to preserve their red shirts if they can. But say Chenault or Keandre goes down with an injury, well, I hope Ray Estes and Justice Harris are ready, because they're going to be thrown into the fire right away. And you can imagine that opposing offensive coordinators are going to know that, and they're going to pick on them early and often. I just find it so interesting that opposing offensive coordinators are choosing to attack Chenault. Yes, he's given up a big play or two each game, but for the most part, I think he's been pretty consistent. where you're not going to attack the newer corner of the two, the guy who's only played in two collegiate games now, at Keandre Thomas. Again, I can understand you not wanting to attack Antoine Winfield for obvious reasons. I can imagine why you don't want to attack Duke McGee because he's his veteran. You know, he's been playing in a lot of games and he's proved that he's been pretty solid. And then Jacob Huff, I think, throughout the last 9 months has proved if you throw the ball anywhere near him, there's a pretty good chance he's going to get a hand on it. And if not two, to pick it off. So Minnesota's secondary is going to be a vital part of their success here for the next month and a half, 2 months, 3 months, and they have to stay healthy.
Yeah, like we've talked about, you know, the secondary is where they just don't have a lot of options, not a lot of depth. But linebacker is a position we knew had a lot of depth, and it still surprises me, you know, some of the guys that aren't getting a lot of playing time, like a Julian Huff, for instance, you know, a guy that you saw extensive time his freshman and sophomore year, still making a big impact on special teams. But there's just such a backlog at linebacker. Another guy, Cody Polk, can't seem to get a lot of run given, you know, just the backlog of talent there. And it's a nice problem to have, but it still just surprises me.
Yeah, I mean, or even Blake Cashman to an extent. Yeah. You know, we had a couple of posters in Gopher Illustrated go, where's Blake Cashman back? Well, all right, let's think about this in terms, folks, of Minnesota's defense. For the most part, they've been playing a lot of 4-2-5, which is base nickel. That means you have Thomas Barber and Jonathan Celestine on the field. Why would you be taking either one of those guys off with how well they've been playing? Celestine, I mean, was a man possessed at times, especially in the second half, and there's a reason they call him Thumper, and I think he's been playing extremely well. I've been very impressed with Thomas Barber through two games. Again, he's not showing, you know, any of that true sophomore inexperience. He's trusting his instincts and he's been making a couple of different big plays. And then you look at the passing downs. All right, we'll take off a defensive end. You know, we'll interchange some of the linebackers. So Kamal Martin and Blake Cashman come out of the field. Well, I mean, where are you finding playing time
right. For
Julian Huff or Blake Cashman more, Cody Polk more?
Again,
Jalen Waters hasn't really seen any time. Again, yeah. These linebackers, especially Blake Cashman, I noticed on special teams, I believe, has all two or three of his tackles were on special teams. Again, that's where he made his hay last year. And if you're not going to be seeing a lot of snaps on defense, well, make your hay on special teams and keep making an argument for yourself to get more snaps. So Minnesota's trying to figure out a way to get them all snaps. Rob Smith's got his hands full. And it's a great problem to have, especially when the defense is playing as well as they are.
All right, let's close out defense here with, you know, you look at the stat line for Steven Richardson, you know, one total tackle, but I still don't think there's reason to be concerned. He's, you know, he's gathering offensive linemen to allow for other guys to be making plays. Any reason for concern from you, Ryan?
No, I was messaging with a collegiate coach who just thinks that the scheme change that Minnesota's installed with a Rob Smith system has just kind of negated some of the impact that you would see from a previous coaching staff. Steven Richardson is tilted in a one. And again, that's basically asking for the center and guard to double team you consistently. So, you know, maybe throughout the season, we Steven maybe kind of move out to maybe a three technique and you sacrifice Merrick Jackson on the inside as the sacrificial lamb and you let Steven maybe get more and more one-on-ones, that is. But with how well Minnesota's defense has been playing, again, yes, you would like to see Steven Richardson get more opportunities for himself. Again, we know what kind of player he can be. Again, only one total tackle to show for it statistically through two games, but the impact that he's creating in terms of drawing double teams and allowing linebackers to flow through, allowing other guys such as Gary Moore, to get that strip sack fumble per se. He's allowing other guys to showcase their skills. So, unless Minnesota's defense starts faltering, I don't think that you really need to tinker with it too much because they're just playing very well.
All right, let's close out with a little special teams talk. I thought that they came back and kicked the ball particularly well, especially place kicking. We get to see, you know, I'm actually trying to pull up the stats, so I'm sorry that I'm so slow right now. But we saw that
a 26-yarder and a 49-yarder.
Yeah, so Emmett Carpenter was
in the fourth.
Go ahead.
The 49-yarder was in the pouring rain.
Yep.
That may be one of the most impressive kicks I've seen from Emmett Carpenter. Again, time and situation. Minnesota really needed to get those 3 points before half to switch the momentum back. because if, you know, say Emmett Carpenter misses there at 17-14, Oregon State gets the ball to start the second half and still with all the momentum. Again, Minnesota just had a touchdown negated on the previous play, and Emmett Carpenter comes into a monsoon, a very slippery field, as we'd seen, you know, on the punt. You know, guys are slipping and sliding everywhere. And he comes in and he drills it from 49. Again, that's extremely impressive. That's exactly what you want to see out of your kicker. Again, Big Ten kicker, the year for a reason. The other thing on special teams that I know that you probably caught was Emmett Carpenter and Ryan Santos kind of switched kickoff duties.
I think they I think they only did once, and that was on the short one, and Carpenter kicked it right out of bounds. Yeah,
I didn't really understand the.
I thought
idea
it was more there,
behind it.
I thought they were going for a directional kick, trying to pin him in the corner, and he just kicked it a little bit too long.
Again, I don't understand why you just don't ask Ryan Santoso just pop it more in the air. But again, that's you and me nitpicking things. But again, you never want to see the ball go out of bounds. And again, we know that Emmett Carpenter struggled with that at times on kickoffs last year. So again, why add more to his plate and not just let Ryan Santoso do it? Because again, Santoso only had to punt twice in the day. That means your offense is doing pretty darn good considering they ran 66 plays.
Yeah.
Two punts for 87 yards on average, one inside the 20. Again, there's nothing to really come back with on Santoso. And then in the return game, Chanel only had one return of the many punts. Again, Minnesota just kind of went away from the ball as they weren't the greatest of punts in the world. And Shannon Brooks, 2 for 40 on the kick return game. I think overall, Minnesota special teams were pretty good again, especially on the kickoff with Blake Cashman, Jalen Waters, and even Melvin Holland getting in there and throwing a shoulder. So I know that you were pretty excited about that when I got a message. So, again, there's not a lot to really dive into that's negative in terms of a 48-14 victory over a Pac-12 team. And that's a very good thing to talk about. And I think in terms of even coaching decisions, I think you've seen a very disciplined Minnesota team. You see a team that's really buying into whatever, you know, Kirk Ciarrocca is preaching on offense, and you see the defense, even every fourth down. I mean, you see all those guys hold up the fist. If they pan to the sidelines, they're all holding up their fist. I mean, winning obviously helps a team buy in, you know, to believe in a coaching staff. And I think that Coach Fleck is getting a lot of guys to buy in, and they're seeing, you know, the fruits of, you know, what they're trying to build pay off. So I think that we've seen a pretty disciplined team overall. I forget what the penalties were. I don't think they were particularly great in terms of for Minnesota.
Yeah.
Do you have those off?
I don't have.
6 for 70.
Okay, 6 for 70.
Yeah, and then Keandre Thomas got burned, and you got a PI. Jacob Huff got hit on a double move, and he saved a touchdown by grabbing the guy.
That was the right play. Like he should make that play.
Yes.
That's a good penalty.
Yes. If you're going to be burned, and again, that's the nice thing about college football opposed to the NFL. If you're, you know, going to give up a touchdown and you know it, well, then just freaking tackle the guy, because 15 yards is better than a 55 yard score. You live to see another day. So, again, is that what you want to see consistently out of each one of these players? No. But, you know, a 6 for 70 in terms of penalties, it didn't really feel like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree.
It feels a lot different in terms of team discipline. Mm-hmm. So, again, and most importantly, I believe Minnesota was +2 in the take-give, and they were positive against Buffalo. I mean, that's a key to a PJ Fleck successful season. That's why, again, we harped on this. That's why PJ was so successful at Western Michigan. He had the #1 take-give in the nation. So if you're always consistently taking the ball and giving your offense more opportunities to score than the opposing team, you're not giving the ball away. Again, you're going to have more chances to win. You're going to put yourself in more advantageous situations. And that's what we've been able to see through two games under PJ Fleck.
Well, it is nice to start the season 2-0, and I think arguably their biggest test will be coming Saturday. We will preview that Thursday. And you should be able to see that, you know, probably later Thursday evening, Friday morning in your podcast aggregator. I want to thank you guys all for listening. Don't forget to check out.
Before we get out of here, again, I believe it was a 50 gift rewind from today's, you know, look at the Oregon State game. And again, folks, I can't stress enough. Again, I think Luke told me that I think a place called The Ringer started this, or who started this, Luke? I had no idea.
Grantland
started this. Again, when I was, again, trying to become a more knowledgeable football fan, you know, this was one of the ways was, again, I love to, you know, listen to football, love to read about football, love to watch football, and I want to become a smarter fan. And again, this is one of the ways you can do that is, again, you go through each quarter and you look at the key situations. You know, Minnesota converts a third and long. Well, what happened? Well, again, it was pretty key that Donnell Green peeled back and he hit the blitzing linebacker. You know, why did that happen? You know, what was the play that Shannon Brooks broke that 15-yard run that looked so pretty? Well, who was the blockers there? You know, different things like that. Or why did Rob Smith able to find a lot of success against the screen against Oregon State? 49 or 50 gifts to go through and really just recap the game, solidify what you think you saw in your mind. Again, I think, again, if you have 10, 15 minutes to go through each one of those, I can tell you it took me many hours. It's one of my favorite pieces to do. It is my favorite piece to do during football season because it even helps me learn. So as Luke said, we will be back later this week to preview a Middle Tennessee State team that just beat Syracuse at Syracuse. Again, I don't know how good of a football team that Syracuse is going to be, but it is worth noting. So if you want to help us out, you can go to iTunes or Stitcher, whatever podcast aggregator you have, and you can rate and review us. Again, that helps us tremendously try to find other Golden Gopher football fans. And again, this is me just being kind of nosy, but if you sit next to a couple of different fans at your game that you think would really enjoy the podcast, because again, in this Twin Cities market, I don't think there can be enough Golden Gopher football time. You know, tell them about the podcast. You enjoy what Luke and I do, and especially next week when Derek Burns returns from assignment to break down Middle Tennessee State, we would greatly appreciate it. And again, Gopher Illustrated is you know, my place of work. So if you want to head on over there and see what's happening on the football side of things, I know Ryan James is all over it in terms of the Eric Curry impact, you know, him being out for the year, and Minnesota's trying to get their final spot in the 2018 recruiting class build. So Gopher Illustrated should be the place to be. So for Luke, for myself, we thank you guys for listening once again, and go Gophers.